Hi, this is Alan Chartok in the Congressional Corner. I'm talking to David Hawkins. And who is he? He is the editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum. He is as distinguished as you're going to get. And why he's taking the time to talk to us, I don't really know, but I'm incredibly grateful.
I started my career at the Albany Times Union. That's why.
That's great. And we've been talking about who is leading in the race to the Democratic nomination. And you talked a little bit about the fact, and I've watched this too, that the two progressives, Warren and Sanders, are beating each other's brains out. They both have approximately the same number of voters. If one of them was there, they might be beating Biden, but they're not. So what's the likelihood that somebody with a strong ego like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, who is so bright, will step back and let the other one prevail?
It doesn't seem like it at the moment. It really doesn't. I mean, Bernie Sanders is a dogged competitor. He, of course, was dogged right till the end in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. He really never stopped running. I mean, I talked to his campaign manager the morning after Trump was elected, and he signaled to me. I just happened to run into the guy at a conference, at a post-election conference. And he said, that he absolutely expected that Bernie now thought more than ever he would run because he perceived Trump as an existential, threat to everything he holds dear from the very start. So, yeah, I don't think Bernie Sanders is going away. Obviously, she has come way up in the poll. She was not in second or third place until relatively recently. Now she's kind of enjoying a pretty good moment. I don't think either of them are going to go away. But again, one of the oldest cliches that I know is that, a year is a lifetime in politics. So even a few months can be, a career in politics, and even a day can be a career in politics. And nobody's got survivability the way Donald Trump seems to have survivability in today's political climate. And so there's lots of scenarios in which you could imagine any of the front runners falling by the wayside and one of those second tier folks surging to the fore.
David, there are people who still to this day blame Bernie for Hillary's loss and are saying, had he been a little bit more supportive, she might have won.
That is one of a thousand reasons why people are saying Hillary Clinton lost. It is true that if you view the ideological spectrum of the world or of the country, not as a straight line, but as a circle, that at some point at the very bottom of the circle, the people on the angry people on the far left and the angry people on the far right sort of come together, the people who feel disenfranchised, screwed by the system. Some of those people, there are some voters who went from Bernie Sanders in the primaries of 2016 to Donald Trump in the fall because they felt like he was the outsider, the anti-establishment guy, the guy sticking up for the little guy, the one who was anti, Trump managed to be the one who was anti big corporate America, even though he's he claimed to be. Anyway, we all know that story. Bernie Sanders is some of Bernie Sanders's people have gone. Went over to Trump. Presumably, a lot of them have had buyer's remorse and would come back into the progressive Democratic fold next fall.
I would think so. Let's talk about the squad. The squad is fascinating because, number one, it's catching on. Article in the paper, just as I was just reading, suggesting that AOC, Cortez's win, has gotten an awful lot of other people to say, maybe I can do that too.
I think that's right. I think that there will be there will be some AOC-like challenges. I mean, she is a unique phenomenon in so many ways in modern American politics. One way is that it's pretty difficult to catch a member of Congress, especially a senior, well-financed member of the Democratic leadership, to catch him napping. Most of these members of Congress are smart enough to witness a surprise attack before it's a true surprise. Joe Crowley did not witness that. He did not take it seriously enough. In the end, AOC's path to Congress was paved with something like 6,000 votes. I think in the New York primary, in the primary in her congressional district, the one where she ousted Joe Crowley, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I think it was something like 28,000 votes for her, 22,000 votes for Crowley. So it was a strange phenomenon, hard to repeat. You'd think that, and many of the Democratic incumbents who are looking at folks from the progressive left, the outsider progressive left groups that are trying to recruit these people, are seeing them coming. Elliot Engel in New York City seems to be seeing it coming. I'm still expecting somebody like that will take on Jerry Nadler on the Upper West Side. You probably know of some others that are underway.
They can't beat Nadler. That's ridiculous, don't you think? I mean, Nadler came up as
I think Nadler will see it coming. I mean, I think, you know, so here's what I think. I mean, this might lead us into a discussion of impeachment, but I think it's unclear for now precisely where Nadler's going to end up between now and next spring on as the tip of the spear. That's the second time I've used that since we've been talking this week on impeachment. If the progressive left thinks that he's dropped the ball on that, there could be a significant challenge.
Which is why
organizational and money muscle. Yes, he would.
Which is why, of course, Nancy Pelosi let him off the hook and allowed him to go ahead. But I think I see that Nadler is having it both ways. He is doing the run-up to impeachment, which is what Pelosi wanted. But at the same time, right, he is saying he's for impeachment, which gets him a
right.
little of both. Yeah, I think you're right about
yeah,
that.
Impeachment and everything but name, right?
Now, there's dark music playing in the background. Maybe you can't hear it. But here's what. Donald Trump loves AOC. To him, if he can paint the Democratic Party, which is anything but leftist, I mean, the reason mm-hmm. that the House got taken, we all know, is because the moderates prevailed, the blue-purples prevailed. Right. So he wants everybody to think that this leftist, sometimes accused of anti-Semitism group is in control of the Democratic Party, in which case he wins.
Exactly right, and it does, and it certainly, I think you're exactly right, and it certainly doesn't hurt Mr. Trump's view of this, that those folks all happen to be female and non-white.
Right, so Trump is trying to paint them as the AOC group. We know that, you know, there are a couple of people who have been accused in that squad of anti-Semitism themselves.
Right.
Does that hurt them?
I think it does. Yeah, that aspect of this is not probably my strong suit. I think it does hurt them in some quarters. I think it obviously does hurt them, you know, in places where there's a strong Jewish vote. I mean, I'm not sure that it hurts them. It hurts them to be seen if when the president calls them unpatriotic and un-American, and that hurts them, I think, more than being labeled anti-Semitic. And the anti-Semitic thing does sting with some core Democratic constituencies.
Okay, so now one of the most fascinating things of all, which we will talk about the next time, is the Massachusetts race between Ed Markey and Congressman Kennedy, A. Kennedy, in direct lineage with the Kennedys. And we'll talk about that because I'm fascinated by how that's going and how many people are supporting Markey in my home state of Massachusetts as opposed to Kennedy. Will that matter? We'll take that up next time. Thanks, David Hawkins. We'll see you then.
Looking forward to it.